If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hola.
Hello, this call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow, ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow, now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart, they thought, why stop there? Why not create other exciting and unexpected combinations, like rainbows and ropes, or fruity and gummy, or chewy and more chewy? That's why they created fun treats like Sweet Tarts Twisted Rainbow Ropes, Gummies Fruity Splits, and Chewy Fusions. When you dare to combine, it's sure to blow your mind. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine. Visit SweetTartsCandy.com to shop now.
She was offered a place at the St. Petersburg Conservatoire at the age of 16, and I've managed to find in the Russian State Historical Archive in St. Petersburg the correspondence between her mother and the conservatoire. She was too young, so she started as an external pupil of the conservatoire. And it was beautiful to see her mother's letter in her handwriting to the conservatoire asking for them to consider her for a place.
That was Graham Griffiths talking about the Russian composer Leocadia Kasparova.
You're listening to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine. We're the UK's best-selling history magazine, available in print and several digital formats all over the world. Find out more at historyextra.com/subscribe or look out for us in your digital newsstand or app store.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast. I'm Rob Attar, the editor of BBC History Magazine. This Thursday, the 8th of March, is International Women's Day. And to mark the occasion, BBC Radio 3 are going to be airing a concert featuring music from five of history's forgotten female composers. In today's podcast, we're going to be hearing about the extraordinary life of one of the composers, Leocadia Kasparova, whose career coincided with the revolutionary era in Russia. Her story has been researched by Dr. Graham Griffiths of City University, who is one of the experts working on the project with Radio 3. He spoke to our deputy editor, Charlotte Hodgman.
Well, Graham, you've been studying Kasparova for over 4 years. So who actually was she and how did you first hear about her?
Well, you're quite right. I have been studying Kasparova intensely for 4 years, but I first became interested in her 15 years ago, when I was studying for my doctorate at Oxford. I was writing a thesis on Stravinsky, and I was particularly interested in Stravinsky's musical education in Russia, because it was something that he had sort of glossed over quite fiercely and really put people off even asking about it all through his life. And really he dismissed everybody in Russia during his youth and early years. He'd really sort of made it clear that he hadn't gained anything from any of them, which is extraordinary considering he studied with Rimsky-Korsakov, for example. But I was particularly interested at the time, in his piano music. And so I was very taken by a comment that Stravinsky made in his autobiography that despite criticizing his piano teacher for being antiquated and a rather boring person, she did give him two very valuable things. And these really were the only positives that we can get from Stravinsky about his education. This fascinated me. He said that his piano teacher, and he didn't even mention her by name. He didn't have that courtesy to mention her by name and thank her by name. He just said, my piano teacher was really, really antiquated, but she gave me an excellent piano technique and a sense of métier, a true sense of the profession of a pianist and significantly a pianist composer, because she was, even at the age of 28 when she was teaching Stravinsky, a very successful concert pianist and composer, playing her music across Russia and even venturing into Western Europe, Berlin and London and so forth like that. So from her example, he later, it took Stravinsky another 20 years, quite honestly, to become as successful as she was as a pianist composer. This was after all his famous ballets, The Rite of Spring and so forth. Much, much later, when Stravinsky reached the age of 40, he decided he would relaunch himself as a neoclassical composer, and he would really do it, as I say, from the soapbox of the piano bench. He wrote piano music that he wanted to play himself, and with this music he launched himself as a neoclassical composer. And it was at that point, and this was the music I was studying at Oxford, at that point I began to make that connection, a very, very strong connection with his neoclassical piano music and the kind of piano education he'd received from this very remarkable person to whom he paid tribute.
So, he wasn't particularly complimentary about her then, but why do you think her musical contributions have been overlooked, really, until now?
Well, you see, the Russian Revolution turned life upside down. And if you were lucky to survive, you had to be grateful for that. I think it was that traumatic for most people. The story of Shostakovich's eternal conflict with Stalin and with the official policy on the style of musical composition. I mean, this is very well known, very well documented. But much less well known is the fate of much humbler musicians like Kashperova. Before the revolution, she was feted in St. Petersburg as one of the leading lights of the musical scene. She was very well known, loved as a person, a very close friend of Balakirev, the great Russianist composer, and Glazunov, who was the principal of the St. Petersburg Conservatoire, very well known to Rimsky-Korsakov, so the whole circle. I mean, she performed many of their piano sonatas and so forth in first performance. In fact, she gave the premiere of their works. And significantly, a lot of her own music was performed, and she was even published. She was published in St. Petersburg. But when the revolution came, she fled St. Petersburg, or Petrograd, as it was, and not a note, if you can believe it, not a note of her music I can trace was ever performed again from the time of the Russian Revolution to her death in 1940. She gave a few concerts in Moscow, but she was always engaged to play the sonatas by the greats, you know, Glazunov and Balakirev and so forth. Not a note of her own music was played, and this must have been very, very hard on her. But it's linked to her extraordinary life story. When you are researching a historical subject, and musicology, for me, is at its most exciting when you're doing that, you can have an enormous stroke of luck. And this happened to me in 2014 when I first went to Russia. Kasparov is mentioned in a very important book called, a two-volume study called Stravinsky and the Russian Traditions. This is a tremendously exhaustive and brilliant academic study. It mentions Kasparov saying that, you know, there is, she was his Stravinsky piano teacher, there is talk of a symphony even by this, but the tone is a little bit, this is rather unlikely. You know, this is rather unlikely that this piano teacher could have written a symphony. And when I went to St. Petersburg in April 2014, my first port of call was, of course, the conservatoire. I wanted to have access to the library just to begin my archaeology, my excavations. And I had a meeting with the Arrains, with the principal of the conservatoire. I mean, you can't just walk in and go into the library and say, can I look at this? No, I wanted to do it properly. And obviously, I had arranged a meeting with the director. But when I arrived, she was a little bit held up. And I was asked to wait for 5 or 10 minutes. And I asked the person who was hosting me there, I said, could I just pop into the library just for a second, as we're just standing right outside the library? I have a question. I popped in and I said to the librarian, what do you have of Kasparov? And of course, she looked at me completely blank and said, who? I've never heard of this one. I said, Kasparov, and I wrote it out. And she came back in a couple of minutes with the symphony.
Wow. Oh, so it exists then?
Yeah. She came back with the symphony, with a beautiful and florid dedication to Glazunov written on the front by Kasparov. So if you like, I was enormously fortunate at that point. Now, having started with the crown jewels, if you like, I had to piece together her biography and find other works. And this has been a very arduous, exhausting, but thrilling journey. And I've been to Russia now 6 times, St. Petersburg and Moscow. And every scrap of composition, every piece I found of hers, is a beautiful work. It's absolutely wonderful that her music is now being performed again.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We don't always realize just how much our negative thoughts and experiences stick with us and weigh us down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mum does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/historyextra today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/History Extra.
Hola.
Hello, this call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow, ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow, now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
What sort of background does she have? Where were her family from?
Well, she was born in the tiny little provincial town called Lubing in the oblast or the district of Yaroslav, which is to the east of St. Petersburg, southeast, really. And her father seems to be quite undistinguished. He'd been a lieutenant in the Russian army and had taken early retirement for some reason and had bought a small holding in this very rural area, population of maybe 2,000 or 3,000 in the whole area, a tiny little village. But her mother, Maria, was an extraordinarily gifted woman. And in the tradition of Russian mothers, she was not only very, very culturally aware, but she was very brilliant at ensuring that her talented offspring should receive the very best education. I'm thinking, actually, as a model here, the mother of Christina, the mother of the two Rubinstein brothers, Anton Rubinstein, who founded the St. Petersburg Conservatoire and was Kashpareva's piano teacher. I mean, she was in his elite piano class. She was one of the most brilliant pianists under Rubinstein, and Anton Rubinstein is regarded to this day as one of the greatest pianists who ever lived. And his brother, Nikolai, founded the Moscow Conservatoire. So, what, crumbs, you know, those two brothers. But their mother directed them. The mother took them around Europe on tour, to a bit like, if you like, the Mozart family took young Mozart. She took those two boys around Europe. Now, I can't just slip my mind now the name of one of the early teachers of the Rubinstein boys. Was also found and sought out and located by Kashpareva's mother. And Kashpareva had some lessons from her, but originally she sent her to Moscow. And for some reason, I don't quite know why, I'm still trying to find out, maybe she wasn't offered a place at the Moscow Conservatoire, but she was offered a place at the St. Petersburg Conservatoire at the age of 16. And I've managed to find in the Russian State Historical Archive in St. Petersburg the correspondence between her mother and the conservatoire. And she's asking for her daughter to be looked after and given accommodation close by, and she was, and she was too young, so she started as an external pupil of the conservatoire. And it was beautiful to see her mother's letter in her handwriting to the conservatoire asking for them to consider her for a place. So she was precocious as a poet, as a linguist, and as a pianist to be offered a place at the age of 16. Tremendous.
And how did her career sort of progress from there?
Well, she graduated with full colours as a concert pianist, and 2 years later as a composer. And she received... I've seen her diplomas, actually. It's rather lovely, because the diplomas are signed by a whole bevy of the most famous names of Russian music, including Rimsky-Korsakov. He signs the diploma. And Liadov, who was, if you remember, the person first invited by Diaghilev to write The Firebird. And when Liadov turned it down, Diaghilev scratched his head and thought, well, I'll try this young lad, Stravinsky, who's just written this amazing piece called Fireworks, which is just a couple of minutes long for a huge orchestra, very, very exciting. I'll ask him, and you know, the rest is history, as they say. It's really the pure accident, the violent accident of history that that banished her name from the books and from the records. The Russian Revolution dislocated her from St. Petersburg, and of course the city in its former glory never existed again after the revolution, her place in it and her audience, her market, her community of cultured folk was scattered to the four corners if they survived. In Moscow, she, as I say, had absolutely no response there. And there's another curious twist, if I might just mention it. Just before the Russian Revolution, she, you know, at the height of her fame and success that she was ever going to get, she was still teaching the piano furiously and very diligently. And she acquired a new pupil, an adult pupil, called Sergei Andropov, who, with whom she fell passionately in love. And she was 44, and I think probably, as can happen, she had dedicated herself to her art with such intensity, she had sort of lost the plot, if you like, or never had the opportunity to form a relationship. And it's this situation presented itself, and they were married within a very, very short time, within weeks. And the extraordinary thing is that her pupil was a Bolshevik revolutionary and a personal friend of Lenin. Not something you'd expect.
Not at all, no. I was quite shocked by that.
You'd expect her piano pupils all to come from aristocratic families or musical families, simpler, humbler, but at least with cultural background. But this man had an extraordinary, exciting, vivid history as a member of Lenin's Iskra group. This is a group that operated outside Russia, publishing anti-Tsarist literature and getting it back into Russia. And he'd been arrested. In fact, extraordinary. I was just working it out. When Kasperova premiered her piano concerto in A minor in St. Petersburg in 1901, her future husband was incarcerated in the Paul and Peter fortress on the other side of the Neva River.
Gosh. I mean, how do we know what brought him to be having lessons with her?
Well, I don't yet know a lot about him, except from sources from Rostov-on-Don I've made connections with, and they quote Kasperova as saying that she was completely captivated by this brilliantly intelligent man who already spoke four languages, was intensely musical, and was obviously a great intellect and a very fascinating man indeed. And that's all we really know. He came from the Caucasus area and had been involved in the revolution in 1905 in the Caucasus. And but he'd spent the 10 years since that revolution, the first revolution, of 1905, he spent the 10 years going around, forever really, escaping from being chased by the Tsarist police, basically, who were after him. And he even lived in London and operated a printing press here, and sending this anti-Tsarist literature back to Russia. So there are many avenues of research still on my desk here to pursue. But Kasperova married Andropov, and I think we have to thank him for helping her out, taking her out of the danger zone and taking her to the south of Russia and eventually guiding her to Moscow, where this is the extraordinary thing. It seems that he worked at the Kremlin as a mathematics teacher to the Red Army commanders, who were given not just military training, but obviously a general education there. And he taught mathematics in the Kremlin and walked home 20 minutes up the road to their flat. And there was Leocadia composing her little secret pieces and hiding them under the floorboards. Who knows how they survived? But she died in 1940. He died in 1956. And her nephew, Alexei, came to live in the flat, probably from 1956 when Kashpirova's husband died, until he died in 1971. And I've been to the flat. I found it. And that's quite a tale for maybe for another occasion. But I feel in my bones when I found the symphony, I told you, very, very early on, and then piano works and chamber works and songs, and every work that falls into my hands, I read it through and I hear it as I read it, and I think to myself, this is utterly beautiful. This is not merely an academic's indulgence to have found, to be working on a composer that nobody else has worked on yet, with a view to writing an article in a journal. It's far from that. I do sincerely believe that her music has the quality to conquer the hearts of musical audiences absolutely. It's utterly beautiful.
How unusual would that marriage have been? Do we know what reactions were to the marriage between the two?
I don't know. I don't know yet at all what reactions there would have been to that.
Because presumably he would have had split loyalties between his new lot, his new wife and his old life.
Yes. Well, it wasn't just his old life. His life continued as a Bolshevik within the Kremlin and so forth. And I think that would indicate, as far as I can tell, talking to folk, this would indicate that he would have kept her rather a secret. Socially, they could not have attended events at the Kremlin together because she was not a member of the party in that sense. And she was, if you like, very much a representative of the Tsarist world. Her music belonged to that period. In fact, when they first met, Kashpirova, and I've seen the correspondence, absolutely fascinating, she was applying for a job as music teacher at the Smolny Institute in St. Petersburg. Now, this is an institute founded by Catherine the Great I think its official title is for the education of noble maidens. These are the pupils, all girls, and most of them aristocratic, many of them princesses and so forth, tsarinas and so forth, extremely elite group. And she was actually accepted as a piano teacher there. And immediately after, looking at the chronology of it, immediately after meeting Andropov, she sent another letter in resigning from her post before she'd even started to teach there. And at first I thought, well, this is obviously because of his political views. He would never have approved of that. But I think now he probably saved her life because he whisked her out of St. Petersburg soon after, almost immediately after the revolution. And that institute, the Smolny Institute, was closed down. Where everybody went, nobody knows if they survived. But the building became the headquarters for the Central Party, for the Bolshevik Party. And Lenin had his offices in there. So, I mean, there's no way Kashpirova could possibly have kept going there, you know. It was a very, very dangerous situation. And very, very probably Andropov saved her life by getting her out of that quick and disassociating herself completely from the records. She was never actually a teacher there. Otherwise, she would have been persecuted.
What do we know of their life in hiding, you know, during the revolution? Do you know anything yet about that?
Nothing yet. Nothing. It's rather frustrating. I found a biographical couple of paragraphs by one of the archivists, actually, who sorted out her archive when her nephew dropped it off. She sort of sorted it out, and she wrote a little paragraph or two with it, saying that they left Petrograd and went to Rostov-on-Don, which is in the Caucasus. It's the regional capital in the south. And the paragraph says where she presumably gave piano lessons and concerts, as you'd imagine. However, I've written to the conservatoire there, and they've written back to say they have absolutely no record of her ever teaching or working or giving a concert in Rostov-on-Don, and they don't have any of her scores there. So that has, for the moment, drawn a complete blank. And it makes me think that maybe for a couple of years she just laid low there, you know, right after the revolution. I mean, there was civil war as well as revolution. I mean, everything was going on. And the end of the First World War as well. I mean, everything was absolutely chaotic. And I think probably she stayed in that area with her husband's family until things calmed down a bit. And then they moved further north back up to Moscow and established themselves there. So there's, as I say, the biographical details are slowly emerging, but still need a lot of confirmation. But the music doesn't need confirmation. The musical scores that are now being published and performed are there in all their glory.
That was Graham Griffiths, and the musical clips you heard were also performed by him. They were excerpts from In the Midst of Nature, composed by Kasparova. You can listen to the full suite on YouTube by searching for the name of the piece and its composer. And as I mentioned earlier, the special BBC Radio 3 concert, featuring music from all five female composers, airs this Thursday, the 8th of March, at 7:30 p.m. OK, so that is about it for today, but please do join us on Thursday when we'll be speaking to the screenwriter and producer Michael Hurst, whose CV includes some of the most acclaimed history dramas of recent years.
Thanks for listening to this History Extra podcast, which was produced by Jack Fletcher. Do let us know what you think about this episode by emailing podcast@historyextra.com, and we might read out your messages in future editions. Alternatively, why not keep in touch via Twitter or Facebook, where you'll find us at History Extra. For more great history content, don't forget to visit our website, historyextra.com, which is full of history articles, quizzes, image galleries, and more. Plus, it's where you can download hundreds of previous episodes of this podcast.